Hey
there, Hank. This your girl Dominique LeBlue. I am so glad you are on Anchor. Now I can listen to you while I drive. Anyways, much success. See you around. Bye.
Who came up with this new background music? Oh, hey. You know who it is. It's your boy, Big Tank. Hank, coming at you with a new live stream. Can y'all hear that background music? Trying a little something new. Well, got somebody for you. He just burst upon the scene. Been around for a minute, but he was kind of quiet. But he's doing some big things. And I see big things in his future. We got Mexicali, Fish Keeper. What's going on, man?
How's it going?
Oh, man, I'm chilling. Thank you for coming through.
Pleasure's mine. I mean, I'm totally honored that you wanted to have me on, so thank you.
Oh, man, hey, you're welcome. And the honor's mine because you accepted, man. You accepted it. It means a whole lot to me, you know what I'm saying, to have people willing to sit here and to talk to me. I'm talking about just talking. A lot of folks say, you know, try to say as simple as talking is, man, but it means a world to me.
Well, when Big Tank speaks, people do.
Hey, that's cool. That's cool. Let's see who we got. Who we got in the chat thus far? Who? Let me see. I was in first. How you do, myself? Relaunched Empire, Melly Mel. What's going on, sir? Thank you for coming through. We got Fishy Biz. What's happening? Bob Taylor. Kayla's Aquatics. What's going on, sir? Thank you for coming through. All right, y'all. Who watching? Put up two fingers in the air. Let me know who is in the house. All right. George, man, what's going on? How you feeling?
Good. Good. Just got off of work a little while ago and been looking forward to get on here with you.
Man, I'm looking forward to hearing all about you and let these people know who you are, man, so you can press forward in this thing we call YouTube Fish Keeping. Give them a little old rundown, you know, introduction to who you are, man, how you started out, who launched you into the fish keeping, maybe where your roots were set, all the way to who you are now.
Okay. Well, I've always been fascinated with fish since I was a little kid, but I guess just things weren't in a situation at the time when I was younger that, you know, I could get a fish tank of my own. You know, I come from a very humble background. You know, my father has always had to work real hard for what we had. And I spent time between living in Mexico and actually living here in the States. I'm originally was born in Los Angeles, but moved to this little town called Calexico, probably when I was about 8 or 9. And what's so unique about this little town is it's actually a border town. Well, for you guys to live in Texas, it would be like El Paso in Juarez. Similar situation. The difference is, Calexico is kind of a very unique situation because most of the border towns, the American side city, is usually larger than the city across the border. And here we have the reverse dynamic. The Mexican city is the million plus inhabitants, and Calexico was maybe 30,000 people. And where I come from, it's called the Imperial Valley, and it's a farming community, and it's composed of several different little towns. There's the major towns would have been Calexico, El Centro, Imperial, Brawley, Heber are predominantly the bigger towns. All, and I say bigger because they all had over 10,000 people in them. El Centro probably being the largest because it's kind of the center of the Imperial Valley. And I think valley-wide, we were lucky if we're pushing over 150,000 people. Now, you take the flip side of that, go to Mexicali. Mexicali is over a million point five people living down there. So our entire identity is really influenced by the Mexican City, because they're the ones that make our community thrive. They're the ones that are coming to spend their money to our community. So it's a very interesting dynamic that we have there. So as a kid living in this border town, Calexico, the whole reason I was even living there part-time was because I was going to school in the United States. And then our regular home, our house was in Mexicali, hence the name of my channel, Mexicali. And Mexicali is actually a play on two different words. It's, if you look at it, the first three is MEX for Mexico, and the last four, Cali, is for California. Now, you look at Calexico, and it's the opposite. Calexico.
Okay.
So okay. That's where that name comes from. But being that I was living there, like I said, I would say that basically I lived in Calexico from Tuesday to Thursday. And the reason I say that is because from Friday evening all the way till Monday morning, we would go home to our house in Mexicali and spend the weekend down there. And then on Monday morning, I'd do the trek, come across the border. And then we had a real small apartment. Well, it was actually a garage that was converted into a little studio. And we were a family of four living in there. Ooh. And but it was okay because it was a means to achieve what we wanted. My dad was also working in the United States. So it allowed him to go to work without having to do the border crossing on a daily basis. Gotcha. And so he didn't have to get up early and do the hour long line or 2 hour long line. You know, we were already on the United States side. He could get up probably 30 minutes before work and take off, and we could just walk to school. So that was part of growing up. Hence why I never really kept fish when I was younger. Just one, I didn't have the room to do it. Two, you know, what my dad was bringing home was enough to provide us with food, shelter, and just the basic essentials. So there wasn't a whole lot of money to go around to do some other stuff. It wasn't until probably I was about, I want to say 16, when I was in high school, my sophomore year, I found out about a program that the school had that was called the Youth Experience Services or something like that. And it said yes. The acronym was YES. And in this YES program, what they would do is they would allow you to take one of your electives to be able to use it to work, and you would use your lunch break. So you had 2 hours during the day that you could actually be employed, and you were employed by the school. So you could either work helping out in the janitors, doing the building maintenance for a couple of hours, or in my case, I was helping out the cafeteria. So during our lunch break, we were helping with serving food and bringing out the trays and stuff like that. And after lunch, it was the washing down of the tray. So we were dishwashers and cleaning out everything. What was so unique about that, or the reason why it was so appealing to me, was because all my life I've been very athletic, and you know, I played sports. And if I knew if I wanted to get a job after school, that was going to interfere. I was going to have to pick between either doing sports at school or working. And I wanted to do both. So this happened to fall right on right up my alley, because it allowed me to work a couple of hours each day and allowed me to stay after school and practice and do all the stuff that goes along with doing sports activities. It also is starting to put a little bit of coin in my pocket. You know, we got paid once a month. So even at minimum wage, which at the time was like $6, $6.25 or something like that, you know, it's $12 per day, but you only got paid once a month like the teachers. So you had a decent little paycheck at the end of the day that, you know, was just your spending money. And my mom always, you know, first check I was going to give it to her, and she turned around and said, nope, that's your money. That's for you to do whatever you want with it. So that was the first time I actually had my own money. And that's when all of a sudden, this desire of having tanks was finally going to start being able to get fulfilled. But the whole reason behind me getting into fish at the time I did was really for all the wrong reasons. There was a little local store, a little hardware store called True Value. And they had a little bit of everything, and they also had a little pet shop. And it just so happened that the person working at the pet section was this very cute little girl that was working there. So that, and the fact that I was spending so much time just chatting her up and just trying to get to know her, that I eventually had to buy some fish. And that's what I ended up doing. I ended up picking a couple of convict cichlids, and was able to buy a small 10-gallon tank, those metal frame tanks. I picked it up at a yard sale, you know, maybe a couple of bucks at the most. And that was like the perfect excuse to continue to go back to the store once I had the fish, because now it's like, okay, I got the fish. What else do I need for the fish tank? Obviously, you know, kind of playing a little bit of ignorance. And, you know, every time I would go there, she'd sell me something for the fish tank. And that was kind of how I got started. But once I was in, my fascination for fish had never gone away. Anytime I was, as a kid, we'd go to doctor's appointments. It was very typical back then that they would have some type of a fish tank in the waiting lobby. So I would always sit there and just stare at the tanks. I mean, I could sit there for hours. Well, I could still do that for hours. And just, you know, look and see the behavior of the fish, how they're interacting with their environment and all that stuff. That's always fascinated me. Also, being that we were in Mexicali, a lot of people don't know this, but Mexicali has a very long history of a large Chinese community. And the reason is because once they got done building the railroad tracks in San Francisco, they were pretty much run out of there. And they couldn't go back to China, so they kept going south. And everywhere they went, they kept getting run off until eventually they crossed the first city into Mexico, which was Mexicali. So for the longest time, Mexicali was recognized as the best Chinese food outside of China. And I, growing up, didn't think much of it. I thought it was just like, okay, people are just saying that. It wasn't until maybe a few years ago, watching a documentary on it, that's how I know all of this, because I didn't know this growing up. I've always had a little bit of fascination for history, and that's kind of some of the things that I like to do when I'm not doing fish. And I came across this documentary, and I used to hear that they had, because you wouldn't see them in town. You would see them at the restaurants, you'd see them at their shops, but you never saw them really walking around the city. And I never understood why. Well, it turns out that the city of Mexicali has an underground city that is entirely where they live. They had their own markets down there. They had their own shops down there. They would come up periodically just to go to work or go to their shops. But everything they did is an entire city. There's now a tour that you can take where they'll take you to these underground areas of the city. I didn't know this until I want to say maybe 10 years ago is when I learned about this. Their influence is so much that as soon as you cross from the United States into Mexicali, you wouldn't understand why there's this, they call them pagodas. It's like what do you call it in English? It's basically, it looks like a Chinese temple. As soon as you cross the border, because you can cross on foot, and that's the welcoming from Mexicali, is this Chinese like open air temple. And I never understood why. Now that I've learned the history, it makes perfect sense. And but you know, that was just a little bit of Mexicali. But as far as going back to me growing up, and so I started keeping the fish, and you know, eventually I had to do something where I had to keep my fish alive. because, you know, I started, they would get sick, I'd go back and she'd tell me, oh, what's wrong with them? You know, I'd tell them, oh, they're not really swimming much, or they looks like they got a little salt on them. These little white spots, I don't know what it is. Come turn out, it's ick. Obviously, I wasn't using any water conditioner. I was just using straight tap water. So I was stressing this fish out tremendously. So at that point, she goes, you better start doing some research how to keep these things alive or you're going to kill them. So I ended up going to the library. And that's where I started learning how to keep fish. Actually back then, at that time, the internet was not really a thing. It was dial-up, and you didn't have sites like you do with YouTube now. There were forums, and even those weren't very sophisticated. So I would go to the library and look at books. One of the very first books was a book that was Welcome to the World of Cichlids or something like that, or The Complete Guide to Keeping Cichlids. And on the cover, the only reason I even opened that book was because right on the cover was a black convict cichlid with a bunch of fry around the head. And I said, oh, those are my fish. So I picked it up, started reading, learned that you need to keep them at a certain temperature. Fish have a range of temperature. You got to keep them. When you do water changes, you're supposed to dechlorinate the water because you got chlorine in the water. That's where I started learning how to keep fish. So I kept them for maybe about 3 more years. At that time, I've already graduated from high school, and I was getting ready to go to a trade school. So I couldn't keep the fish anymore, and ended up giving them to a friend, to different friends, you know, and just kind of got done with fish keeping to that point. That was kind of my hiatus from fish, because from there I went to this trade school, completed the school, came back, went to college, and then just, you know, went to college for a little while, took off for the military, did my basic training and all that stuff, got back, because I was in the National Guard, so I was doing the 1 week in a month. So my time was real restricted. I was still playing ball, I was still playing baseball. And I was playing in leagues in the United States, and I was playing in adult leagues in Mexico. So I didn't really have a whole lot of time to be able to keep fish. You know, so it wasn't until maybe fast forward, I want to say about 6-7 years ago, when after all my kids had left home, it's just me and my wife at home. And one day I'm sitting at work and I'm contemplating. By this time, I've discovered YouTube. I'm looking at the very first channel I was looking at was like Aquarium Co-op, trying to see what, because I was just fascinated by how much fish keeping had come along. Because when I started fish keeping, there wasn't the existence of plants. If there were, I didn't know they existed. All you had were the little plastic plants. You would, you know, put some gravel on it and sink it to the bottom of your aquarium. I can't hear you. Did you ask me something?
No. Oh, okay. I was talking to Bob over here.
Okay. And so I come back, start looking I don't even remember how I started going down that rabbit hole, but I started finding out that fish tanks had really evolved. All of a sudden, you could keep these underwater gardens. And that is what has intrigued me ever since. I love the fish, but seeing those tanks like I have now, and seeing all those plants in there is what got me hooked immediately. So after looking at so many videos, I decided, all right, well, I think I'm gonna buy a 20-gallon tank. So one day in our break room, I'm sitting at our computer and I'm kind of looking at Petco because I heard about the $1 per gallon sales and one of the streams that I was watching. And so I was looking on there and one of the guys walks by and goes, what are you doing? I said, oh, I'm just looking at pricing for fish tanks. He goes, why, you want one? I said, well, I'm thinking about buying one. He goes, well, I bought my kids a 20-gallon tank with a stand and everything, but they're not interested in it. Do you want it? And I was like, all right, yeah, I'll take it. So that day, immediately after work, I swung by, picked it up, and that was my reintroduction into fish keeping. That must have been about 6 or 7 years ago. And I didn't want to go too big because I had kind of dropped hints to my wife that I wanted to do this. And she's like, no, I don't want to do that because they always stink. And, it, you know, what fish tanks used to be is what she still had in mind. And so I was like, oh, if I'm going to do this, I need to do this right. So I came home, set up the tank, and immediately I went to, I only had a Petco there in El Centro. And I ended up getting some Anacris and I think some Jungle Valve that they had. And got busy trying to make it look as pretty as I could. I think floating around on Instagram, I have a picture of that original tank. I thought it looked really good at the time. I look at it now, and I can see all the things that are wrong with it. But that's okay, because that's what's got me back into the hobby. And immediately after that, another one of the guys from work had a 55-gallon that he was getting rid of. It needed to be resealed because it had been sitting outdoors. So he gave it to me. He goes, if you take it, I'll bring it to work and you can have it. That one I kind of dropped on my wife. I didn't tell her about it. I just showed up with it and immediately got onto YouTube, started looking at videos how to reseal tanks. And, you know, I ended up finding a video, showed me step by step how to do it. And I said, oh, I'm going to try it. You know, I'm going to see if I can do it. And to this day, knock on wood, it's still holding. I mean, I did a good job because it's still holding water. It's never leaked. So that was my second tank. It was a 55, standard aquarium. And I kept those two for, I want to say, about 2 or 3 years. And I really didn't get any more just because we were, at the time, I was living again back in Mexicali. And, I didn't have a whole lot of area there that I could set up a fish room, because that's what I always wanted to do. I always wanted to set up a fish room. And since we were renting there, I didn't want to go and set up all these tanks, have to tear them down and move. So I kept it to those two tanks until we ended up moving here to Yuma. And I came to Arizona, and here, once we got the house, it was almost like immediately MTS. We went to the swap meet out here one weekend. There was a gentleman there that was selling like birds and stuff like that. And he had a few tanks where he was keeping baby chicks in them, but he hadn't set them up yet. And I saw it and I asked him, I just, you know, out of curiosity, it was like, it's a different profile of 50, it's a 54 gallon technically. It's a little bit shorter, a little bit wider than your typical 55 gallons, only about 12 and a half inches wide or deep. This one is about 16 inches, but it's a little bit shorter. It's still a 48 inch tank. And I saw it and I immediately was drawn to it, because I was thinking I could really plant this tank real heavy. It's going to give me the room that I need, because I did it on the 55, but you start putting hardscape in there and it starts running out of space immediately. Hey, what's up, Steve? And so I wanted it. I asked the guy, I said, are you interested in selling that? He goes, well, it all depends. How much are you willing to give me? And I just said, you know, because he had a couple of 10-gallon tanks there that he was also, and I just kind of said, I'll give you $30 for all three tanks. And he goes, go for it. And that's how I got that tank. Brought it home, cleaned it up. I also resealed that one, and that was just the start of it. Started picking up tanks. After I had those three, I started getting I started posting on our Facebook page. They had some groups here in Yuma that were keeping fish, because I was looking for a fish club. That's what I was really looking for. And I found two groups in here, and I became members of them, and I would post pictures of my tanks as they progressed. And once I had those two tanks and I had the 20 gallon and I picked up those 2 gallons, I decided to build a rack. And again, I went to Aquarium Co-op, because he had an example how to build those cinder block racks. Build me myself a little rack where I set up my very first rack here in the fish room. And I kept posting pictures of that, of the progression of that and stuff like that. So people started finding out that I was that I was collecting tanks. And before I knew it, people that were getting out of the hobby would contact me and asked me if I wanted their tanks. And that's how, at this moment, I have 17 tanks that are set up. And out of those 17, maybe two, three tanks that I've paid for. The rest of them have all been gifted to me. And the biggest contributor to my fish room is a gentleman named Raul Gutierrez, because he gave me this 150 that's right above me. He gave me 320 longs. He gave me 6 10-gallon tanks, and so that kind of really completed my fish room. There's another friend of mine here that gave me he sold me, that's one of the ones that I paid for, was that 75-gallon tank. But along with that, he gave me an acrylic 56-gallon tank that was a marine tank that he had. And I reverted it back to freshwater. And he also gave me a couple of 10-gallons. 10-gallons are easy to come by, but I always get them because I like to use them as grow-out tanks. And not only do I grow out fry in them, but I also grow out plants in them. All my trimmings and stuff like that, I'll set them up with dirt and just grow out plants. So most of my plants in my fish room have pretty much been from the original plants that I've had, and I've just been managed to be able to take them out of there and grow them out in these 10-gallon tanks. So that's kind of where my MTS has taken me to. The more time I spent on YouTube, the more I watched different people on there. And the process of doing that, I came across Jason Maldonado, which you guys know as Aquafunk. And I started following him because I liked his content. I liked his live streams. You know, if those of you that have seen him know, he's very charismatic and he's funny. And I really like that. And I remember by that time, I was contemplating, because I didn't have a fish club around me anywhere, either in the Imperial Valley or in Yuma, of starting my own fish club. But what was going to be different with mine is I was going to go back to Mexicali and start a fish club down there, because come to find out, there was a lot of fish keepers down there. I just never knew it. And because of Facebook, I started getting on these groups and started, contacting people and started making friendships and talking back and forth. And it was, again, the common thread here was Aquarium Co-op watching a live stream. I remember watching one of the streams, and I remember somebody popping up saying, "Hi from Calexico." And that immediately drew my attention, because there's not too many of us from Calexico. There's a lot of us from California, but Calexico in particular, there's very few of us. I saw that, and immediately I got on there, and I was like, "Hey, dude, I'm from Mexicali. Hit me up after the stream." And that happened to be Henry Chavez, who's also one of my friends. He's a very good friend of mine now. As a matter of fact, we were talking about having those electric blue Acaras. He gave me those. He's the person that gave me those electric blue Acaras. And I hit him up. We started talking on Facebook. Turns out we had family, both of us, in Mexicali, and he grew up in Calexico. So immediately there was a connection. Turns out, you know, we're both avid fish keepers. And we get to talking, and I said, "Hey, do you happen to know if there's a fish club in Mexicali?" And he's like, "No." I said, "Well, we should start one." And he goes, "Yeah, let's do it." And we started posting on Marketplace, of all things, on Facebook group, seeing if anybody was interested. And we started getting a lot of response. But predominantly, it was from the people in Mexicali. So I said, "Let's do it down there. I mean, I don't care. I'll drive down there and I'll start the club." And we were rolling. We had set up our first meeting, and we had set up a date. Everything was moving forward. We had, within a couple of days, we created a group, and within a couple of days, we had about 150 people that were members of that group. So we were all excited. Said, "This is going to take off. We're going to be able to do this." We picked out a date, and we were set to go. And then COVID happens. We start getting all the restrictions, all the closures. So we thought it was just going to be for a little while. We postponed it. This was like in we were gonna do it like in January of I want to say it was 2018 or 19, and everything was indicating that by April things were gonna go back to normal, so we pushed it back to April. April rolls around and it's gotten worse, and so little by little that enthusiasm starts dying out. A year later, I'm living here in the United States and I'm still talking to them back there. Well, they're behind what's going on with the United States almost about 6 months. By that time, we're starting to lift restrictions. We're starting to allow people to go back out. But when I kept reaching out to them, they were in full lockdown. They couldn't do anything. They couldn't congregate. They couldn't have more than five people together. So before we know it, it's almost 2 years have gone by, and we never had that first meeting. It wasn't until I was getting ready to sanctions had already lifted here almost completely. Mexico, you could get together, but you had to be masked and you had to keep distance and all that stuff. So we set up our very first club meeting, and I think that again was sometime in February of 2021, and we managed to have the meeting. Everything went fine, but by that time our group, instead of being over 100, was maybe about 20 of us that showed up. And then it just, the disappointment of it not being what they wanted, it just kind of slowly died out. To this point, I don't know, I still reach out to them. They all get excited about doing it, but when we try to set a date, nobody seems to be able to make it. So I don't know, I think right now it's on hiatus. But anyways, that was going on, and I happened to be on Jason's screen, and at the very end of one of his streams, he opened it up for comments. So I told him, I said, hey, wish me luck. I'm going to Mexicali to open up the very first fish club in the city of Mexicali. So he immediately responds back. He goes, oh, that's so cool. Let me know how that goes. Make sure you take footage of it. That'll be something cool to see. So that is what really starts Mexicali Fish Keeping. That is kind of like the inception of what my channel has become. I've already been watching YouTube FishTube for about a year by now. And I've always kind of played with the idea that I wanted to do something, but I wasn't really sure. But almost immediately after that stream, Jason reached out to me on Facebook, sent me a message, and we started talking. And he goes, he was the one that really pushed the idea. He goes, you got to document that, film it. If you have trouble editing, I'll help you edit it. He didn't even know me. But that's who Jason is. Jason is somebody that is very helpful, goes out of his way, will drop what he's doing to help you out. I really admire the type of person that he is, because he didn't owe me anything. He didn't know me other than maybe somebody that would watch the stream, and that was about it. But he was going out of his way, above and beyond, to try to help me out. And that's how our friendship really blossomed, was because he would call me up. He goes, hey, did you get the footage? I said, yes. He goes, well, let me see it. So I'd show him what I had. He kind of pointed me to a couple of free apps out there to kind of edit the stuff. He goes, try it. If you have some trouble, hit me up and I'll help you. I'll show you how to do it. So started doing that. He did my very first thumbnail for that video. He was the one that had created that for me. So the whole Mexicali Fish Keeper is really, really thank you to him. That's why I'm here. That's why I started making out videos and putting out content. It's because of the push and the support that he gave me. So, you know, thanks to him, I'm sitting here with you today. But that's a little bit of you know, how this got started. As far as my experience, that's just stuff that I've acquired. I like to tinker with stuff. I can never leave anything alone. I'm always trying to see if this works, let me try this. And I'm always pushing boundaries. I'm always trying to do the one thing, the worst thing you can do is tell me you can't do that. Because I'm the type of person that'll go, oh yeah, watch me. And, you know, for me, example here is one of the things that I would always hear is, oh, you know, you can't grow plants in sand. For some reason, sand is supposed to be a taboo substrate. I know you keep stuff in sand. I keep stuff in sand. And I know other people that keep stuff in sand. So I don't know why that was a thing, but, and I can grow my jungle valve. The best tank that I have that grows jungle valve is nothing but sand substrate. It's got a heavy fish load, and that's where the source of its nutrients. But you know, I don't have any active substrates in some of my tanks. The other thing that I started playing and tinkering around with is using potting soil. You know, I've gone through all the phases of that. I've done the 1-inch layer on the bottom with a 4-inch cap. I've done the super deep substrate that Father Fish talks about. Now the latest thing that I'm playing around with is I've seen that tank plenty of times, and I have a couple of those too in here, and they grow plants no problem. I mean, it's just, you just got to be willing to try it. And, well, here's the thing. When it comes to tanks, you have to figure out what it is you want to do. What's going to be your goal? If you're trying to do a display tank, then you're going to have to go a different route. If you're trying to set up breeding tanks, then they're not going to be the prettiest tank, but they're going to be the best tank because they're going to have a lot of cover. They're going to have some algae. I know people get scared of algae, but if you're breeding fish, algae is probably one of the best things you can have in there, especially if you have that green hair algae in there. That is where, you know, it's going to provide infusoria for your fish. It's going to provide hiding areas. You know, I know I'm preaching to the choir because I know how you keep fish. But, you know, so that's what I'm saying. It all depends on what you want to do because there's room for everything. If you want to set up, to be honest, if I was going to set up a fish tank in my house, my wife has already told me she wants one of those rimless, you know, ADA tanks, kind of like what Majestic puts out there, the stuff that he puts together. She's already said, that's, if you're going to bring a tank in the house, it's going to be a display tank like that. So I understand. My stuff in the garage is for my enjoyment. It's for my pleasure. I do a little bit of breeding. But I like to take a little bit of pride in some of the tanks. So I'm pushing the envelope. I'm setting up display tanks that will hopefully breed fish because I do try to provide, some of the sources that they need to be able to breed for fry to be able to thrive. I have a heavily planted tanks. I run, floating plants on most of my tanks because if I have fry, that'll give them somewhere to hide out. And you know, but I do like my tanks to look nice because I enjoy to look at them. So that's kind of what I have in my fish room. That's just a little bit of what I'm doing and what I, and who I am here in the hobby.
Oh, definitely, man. Hey, you gave us a lot and we appreciate it. Bob Kayla say, do you work with your son Junior on another channel?
My son? No.
Maybe someone else has the same name.
Who does? I know Aquaballs has the same name, but no. When I started out YouTube, I was going under my regular name, which is George Sanchez. And I'm still subscribed to a lot of people under that name. It wasn't until I started putting out content that Mexicali Fishkeeper comes along. But no, I do a live stream, but it's with Steve, Warrior Planet Tanks. And that's a whole other story how me and him happened to meet up. I tell him, we have a lot of things in common, but personality wise, we're a little bit different. We're kind of like the opposite of each other. And I think that's why our friendship works out so well.
I can look, I can say the very same thing. we have some of the same, first of all, we're from the same area.
Yeah.
And there's some very important points that we run concurrent with. And then everything else, we're opposite. So we always have things to discuss. But yeah, now he's a very good friend of mine also.
And yeah, our common thread runs pretty deep. I was surprised. I didn't know anything about Steve when I actually, our conversation started on a live stream he had for his birthday, his last birthday. I came across him again because of Aquafunk. Aquafunk had mentioned about him. That's how I ended up subscribing to his channel and started watching his content. I, by that time, had been watching some of your stuff, and I saw one of his videos where you were on there, and that's how I knew you guys were in Houston. And so when I reached out to him, I felt like I had a little bit of common ground with him because I was following you, and I was following, and I had, by that time, I was already friends with Jason. And so I just popped on. We started chatting back and forth. I know that he's also into plants, and that was kind of like the doorway into our friendship, you know, because we talked about plants. Coming to find out that he's in the military or was in the military, so was I. You know, and we share a lot of the same philosophies when it comes to keeping tanks and fish and stuff like that. So that's kind of where our friendship really, really starts out. And I'm really fascinated, and I'm really glad that this platform exists, because if it wasn't for YouTube or Facebook or any of the social media outlets out there, I wouldn't have some of the friends that I have now or some of the acquaintances that I've made, because there's no way in hell that I would have come across paths with them living out here where I live. There's no way I would have met Jason. There's no way I would have met Steven. No way I would have met you. I see that Eric is out there, Majestic Cichlids. He's another person that I communicate with. You know, and it's all because of social media and the one common thing, which is we all love fish. And that's, I think that's one of the very unique things about this hobby, is how, because of that one common thread, you can make some friendships that you never thought you would make. So you know, that's how you doing, Kenny? So you know, and that's what I really love about this platform, and being able to be on live like I am here today, because out of this I might make two or three more friends, people that I didn't know before, and it's all thanks to all of us having the same hobby that we keep. Hey, Daniel, Thunder Aquatics. So, you know, and I'm pretty sure you run the same path with your friendships too.
Most definitely. Most definitely. I have some people I talk to every day off of YouTube. And I would say I'm not even keeping in contact much with people that I knew and grew up with. But I have got some true friends that I made off of doing this here YouTube thing.
Yeah, it's funny because I look back. I consider myself a social person, and I love to interact. I love to talk, I find myself that my friendships outside of my immediate family, I don't seem to keep them. There's a point where we lose that common interest that we had, whether it was work or it was sports, and I know when I was playing baseball, or you know, it's just that for some reason there's a drift in there. But I find that I, even with people that I've just met within the year, seem to have a stronger relationship with them, you know, with these people, just because we keep fish. That is the craziest thing that I've ever experienced. And I know I can, you know, send a message at wee hours of the night or day or whatever, and I'm going to get an answer back. And then before you know it, you're talking for 1 or 2 hours without realizing that you've been on, you know, going back and forth for that long. So it's a very, very interesting and unique situation that we find ourselves in.
For real. These fish, man, you're talking about the word addiction, you know, for us is negative. You know, in society it's negative. I mean, but it may be the best word, and it's best used in a descriptive manner in regards to this here fish-eye, because, man, you know, once you fall in, it's like you can't get out. You know, it just stays, man.
Yeah, unfortunately, the word addiction has negative connotations, but there can be good addictions. Yeah. I mean, there's people that get addicted to working out. You know, there's people that get addicted to trying to become a better person. The word addiction doesn't have to be a negative thing. I really appreciate having all these tanks, because when I'm not feeling my best, I know I can come in here, get away from everything. I just close the door to my garage. I'll sit here, even though I'm just sitting here, just looking. And, you know, hi, Jesse. And I could just forget about whatever was bothering me. And I'm sure this is not very unique to me. I mean, that's why most of us that are here can relate to that at one point or another. And you hear the stories of people where it's really helped them get out of really, really dark places. And I've been very fortunate that I haven't had experience that. But, you know, we all have our little rough spots that we go through, or where we're not feeling our best. And we all need that one place you know you can get away, and either whether it's to reflect on something, or just to not have to think about something. This is my place. And, you know, and my wife knows that. And I appreciate the fact that she understands that. And she knows when I tell her, hey, I'm going to go in the garage, you know, unless it's something real important, she won't come and get me. She'll let me have my time. Let me do what I need to do. And when I'm done, I'll be back in the house. And so for me, that's what fish keeping is to me. I mean, it's my haven.
Most definitely. And I have one tank, the one I just showed, that, you know, I'm hair grass dude. I mean, I'm a hair algae dude. That's the one tank. If I'm needing to de-stress or whatever, that's the one tank that I actually pick the hair algae out of. Now, I pick it out, but I put it into another tank.
Oh, yeah. If I have fries, I'm going to probably throw some algae in there.
Yeah, I keep it. But that one, I pick it out. You know, I got my shrimp in there, and I got one of these things. Now I'm gonna forget what they're. A rice fish. Got my platinum rice fish up there. You know, I got my least killing fish. You know, it's kind of biotope-ish for ABC aquatic biotopes. You know, this one I'll pick algae out of. I'll take the time on this one. But that's therapy, man. That's therapy. I come in here and just put these glasses on, because other than that, I won't be able to see nothing in there.
Yeah,
but no. Go ahead.
No, I say that's what I like about. Well, I guess that's what I really like about having these funny tanks, because every day I have my hands in these tanks, whether it's I'm trimming back plants, or I'm clean out a little bit of algae here or there, or doing water changes. There's always something to do, and before you know it, 2 or 3 hours have gone by, and you know, you're ready to get back to society.
right. Oh, and Anthony Fisher's friend said, are you afraid of earthquakes? That was way up the list, but I remembered it. Are you afraid of earthquakes?
I grew up with earthquakes, so it's not that big of a deal. What I'm afraid of, and I haven't had one, but I guess out here in Yuma, because it's so sandy, earthquakes are not as destructive as they were when I was in the Crow Valley. I always had fear that a good earthquake was going to knock my tanks off the rack and break them, but you know, these racks can withstand quite a bit of movement. I mean, if you build them right, they're not going anywhere. The worst thing that could happen is that it shakes so much that the tank actually slides off the rack. But yeah, you know, you can take measures to prevent that. I'll tell you what scares me. What scares me is tornadoes or hurricanes or that kind of stuff.
That's not bad.
I know. That's what you deal with. I know. That is thunders, heavy thunderstorms. I say that because my oldest, he was living in Houston, and I got to go up there during one of your, you know, like around this time of the year. Well, no, more like May, where you guys get those serious thunderstorms. The first time I heard that sky crack and the windows seemed like they're gonna bust out, I felt like a little kid. I was trying to hide under a bed. I was like, no, this is not for me. I'll take an earthquake any day because I know that's going to be a few seconds of movement and then it's gone. Ooh. That, you don't know. It's, you know, the sky gets pitch black. The sky is falling. You guys get all flooded out. And you just, I'm like, when is this going to end?
Oh, man.
That was scary.
And it's crazy because I like hurricane season. I mean, yes, I know and I've experienced the perils of it. I love it, man. I love it. I'll go outside and stand on the, you know, stand in the yard as the first little hints of the sideways trickling rain is coming through, the breeze, you know, the darkness, you know, I'm out there like, oh, this is what I'm talking about, you know.
what was the experience for me? I didn't know wind could howl like that. That is some scary sounding wind where it starts and it seems like it's somebody that's moaning like, whoa. I was like, what in the world is that? I've never experienced that. I don't know what that was. I was like, how, what's going to happen? I mean, that to me was frightening. Earthquakes, it's just a little bit of shaking around and then it's gone.
I had one experience with earthquakes. I was in San Diego, California, MCRD, and I had ulcers and some other things happen that I did not disclose, you know, upon enlistment. So they were sending me back home. Honorable discharge, I might add, but yet medical still, they was like, we're sending you to the house. We're not paying you to get sick. So I was in transit platoon. I'm working in the headquarters. I'm buffing, running the buffer. I'm in this long hallway, one door at the far end, and maybe 6 to 8 doors as far as, you know, three or four on either side of them, and I'm buffing. All of a sudden, every door in this hallway started to shake. I didn't feel the floor shake, but every door in this hallway. Now, I'm from Texas. I can't speak, you know, for anywhere else, but you know, the South, there's a whole lot of stories and things, you know, dealing with ghosts and all kinds of stuff that comes from the South. So, I'm in this hallway, these doors gonna shake it. Everybody else chilling, you know. I'm the only one that just stopped dead and looking. Hey, so, y'all just gonna act like that didn't just happen.
Yeah.
Oh man, that was just an earthquake. I'm like, man, all the earthquakes I see on TV shakes the floor, shake everything, stuff falling down. They was like, no, it just depends on how strong the actual tremors are. And the buildings are made to where they're, you know, it's to take that. So the doors,
well,
they're technically free. I mean, they're connected, but they're free sitting, as opposed to the building being, you know, on its whatever platform it has that can take it. The doors are just like, hey, we're going to take this and then we keep on going. But, oh, man, it was crazy.
Well, there's two types of earthquakes. You have the one that just kind of rocks back and forth. And those are usually, they just kind of sway you back and forth. And then you have the ones that are like little waves in the ground. Now, those are the ones that will create damage. Those are the ones that knock buildings down and stuff like that. So typically what you get is just kind of that swaying back and forth. It's just pressure releasing from the tectonic plates. But when you get the big ones, usually it's those that are like, you can literally see ripples in the ground. If you start seeing ripples in the ground, you know that's a big earthquake. And that's not good. It's like, you know how you drop a pebble in the water and you see the ripples, the rings kind of spread out? Yep. Well, big earthquakes, the ones that will bring down buildings, you can almost see that effect on the ground.
That's great.
Yeah. So.
That's great.
Now, what is your favorite snack of choice? Just a little twisted question. That's all. I throw one. I just have one.
I guess ice cream. Not that I can't eat it right now, but ice cream. Ice cream is the one thing that I won't turn away.
Flavor.
Butter pecan.
Nuts. I don't want to. But it's pretty good. It's actually real good. But I can just, the nuts, I just don't want the nuts. My teeth, you know, they get in there and then it's like, oh man, you know. It takes away from it. Now, what all the fish that you have right now?
Okay. I have, in the 75, I have electric blue acaras, and I have a group, I have five of them in there. I have some Buenos Aires tetras in there for the top part of the tank, and I have corridoras, albino corridoras, for my bottom crew. I also have, I think, a Brizonose Preco that I threw in there to grow out. I periodically see them, and a spotted Raphael catfish that if I come in here in the middle of the night and come in here without turning on the lights, I'll occasionally see it. Every time I think it's dead, because I don't see it for months, you know, I'll be doing something to the tank and he'll be out. Or she, I don't know what it is. Next to it, I have mollies. I just have a little tank with some different mollies in there. The next tank, I have some tiger barbs, some glow light tetras in there, and I threw some cherry barbs in there, but I think I'm going to pull them out. I think those tiger barbs are not allowing them to be out and about. So I got to find a different place for them. And I come down to my bottom tank. It's a 55-gallon tank. And I have, it's my Bristlenose Pleco grow up. And so it's mostly Pleco fry in there. I do have some corridoras in there, some albino corridoras. I do have a gourami in there that was gifted to me because they couldn't keep it anymore. So he's in there. And I have a crebensis that's in there. And I had bought him because I was going to breed him. But when I started growing him out, I realized that his anal fin was bent. And so now he's just there. He's going to grow old, and I'm not going to breed that fish. I don't want those genetics to spread. And then I have another 55. And that was my tetra community tank. But slowly over the years, the tetras have been dying out. I still have some silver tips in there. I have some red-eye tetras. And I do have some more corridoras because those breed and I just put them in different tanks. And recently, I had a 10-gallon tank where I was breeding out, you know, just different types of guppies. And it was getting overcrowded, so I put them in there. And I just want to see that tank full of guppies. That's just kind of for kicks and giggles. I want to see that 55 just get full of just different strain guppies. If I happen to see stuff that I like, I might try to line breed it. But for right now, I just enjoy it. I'm sitting literally right here, right next to me. And that's one of my favorite tanks to stare at the time. Right above me, right here, it's the 150. I have some angelfish in there. And this is my wife's tank. And the reason I say that is because I'm trying to get her into the hobby. and she's always told me that she likes angelfish, but I've never had the right setup for them. And when I was gifted this tank, I decided, even though I really, really wanted to do South African cichlids, I said, I need to do the right thing. It's the biggest tank in my fish room, and it's her tank. It's her tank. It's I have about six or seven angelfish in there that she picked out. She hadn't picked them. And I have, again, some grout. I'm growing out some Corydoras in there. I have a whole 10-gallon tank full of those albino Corys. And I put in there some rainbow fish. I have some dwarf neon rainbow fish. And I have a trio of Basmani rainbow fish in there. Right underneath me right here is my goldfish tank. That's a 65-gallon tank. I have that because my grandkids picked out those fish. And I took them out to the pet store. I said, pick whatever fish you want. And they all, one of them picked out a goldfish, and all three of them decided they want a goldfish. So that's why I have that. I have some fantails in there. They're all, these are my grandkids' goldfish. But I take care of them for them. And then on this other side is my smaller tanks. It's the top row is all 10-gallon tanks, and then I have two 20s. 10 gallons are all live bears. I have the different strains of guppies. I'm trying to line breed an Endler guppies in here. The next one is my grout tank for the Corydoras. And then the next tank to that was originally just growing out plants and some sherry shrimp in there. It's actually, that had become my cold tank. And in the process of doing that, it started throwing out blue velvets. So now I'm calling it for the blue velvet. So it's my blue velvet tank, and all my trimmings is where I grow them out. And that's the tank that I go into to get plants for all these tanks that I have. That's the one that's supplied plants for all my tanks. Next to it, I recently picked up some black chin live bears. And that's where I have those in there. That was like a quarantine tank, but I have those guys in there. And then I have some least killifish that I also picked up. A couple of, I picked all these up at the same time at a fish auction in San Diego. And so now those tanks have those fish. The very last 10-gallon tank is my betta tank. I have a little male betta in there with some cherry shrimp, of all things. And people would tell you can't do that. That's why I have it, because they told me I couldn't do it. And they're thriving. I did steal the idea from Lucas Bretz about putting rock piles in there. And that has worked wonderful for me, because that betta can be on top. As soon as he starts diving down, they all scatter into the rocks. And, I've put that tank up on Instagram several times, even with the betta hovering right above the sherry shrimp. He doesn't mess with them now because he knows he can't get them. He might pick off the occasional one, but it's gotten to the point now where I think I could sell sherry shrimps out of that tank. That's how many I have in there. Below those, I have the 220s. I have my platies in one of the 20s. And I'm trying to breed out the blue patties is what I'm trying to get out of that. And then I have my special fish. These are my Aphinias mentos. And these are some killifish, and they're from the Middle East. And these are the same fish that I gifted to Steve. And that kind of, I guess, cemented our friendship, because unbeknownst to him, unbeknownst to me, those were the fish that he had been looking for a very long time. And it just so happened when we started talking that I happened to have them. I didn't even know that he was looking for them. It just came up in a conversation because I know he knows a lot about oddball fish. And I told him, hey, do you know of any good killifish size? Because everything I had looked up for these fish was the very same generic copy and paste stuff, and it wasn't very in depth. And I was trying to get, you know, more information on it. And when he said, well, what fish do you have? And I gave him the name, he almost lost it. He goes, what? How do you have those fish? And I, you know, that's a whole other different story. But I, the case in point is I have them. He gave me the information I was looking for. And one of the things that I try to do, especially with rare fish like that, with people that I know will know how to keep them, I like to send them out there in case my colony crashes. I could come knocking later on and say, hey, can you spare a few so I can start up my colony again? And so far, I haven't. That's not been an issue, but I learned that a while back, that's a good thing to do with fish that are hard to come by.
Gotcha.
And the last one is just a 20-gallon long rack that I have. It's a three tanks, and I only have two of those set up. On the top one, I'm quarantining right now some sailfin mollies and some Australian desert gobies. And the very bottom one is one that I set up because Berto Berto, what's your channel name? Why is it? It just slipped my mind. I had it at the tip of my Garcia Aquatics. he wanted to do a challenge tank, so I had a spare empty 20-gallon long, and so did he, and that's the one we set up for this challenge that we did together. And so that one right now, after I got done finding it and escaping it, I'm trying to breed out white cloud minnows. And so far, I've only had one successful fry survive in there. I got to go in there because it's more of a skate tank and not a breeding tank. And I knew that going into it, that the success rate was not going to be very good. I'm still trying to push the envelope on that one because, you know, why not?
Right.
Trying to see if it'll work. It worked, but not how I wanted it to work. So I might go back in there and drop in some hornwort so they have somewhere to hide.
Yeah, everyone. But hey, you know they'll do it. So yeah, as long as you, when you put something in that form, yeah, they gonna set up shop.
Yeah, that's kind of my favorite breeding plant is hornwort. It's like a haven for those little fry, and it's also buffet for them.
Yeah, I'll grow some hornwort in a heartbeat.
Oh yeah. Yeah, if you got a breeding tank, you need to have it. It's a necessity. It's a mandatory plant.
And I, you know, a lot of people tell me how they get hornwort and it gets brittle and it goes everywhere.
I don't have that issue.
My first little bit of hornwort, I can't even remember ever. Like, I think if you put it and you just leave it and let it, you know, get used to your water and then keep your own hornwort going for the most part, you don't have to worry about it. But no, I've never really had that issue. But I know some people that they mad at hornwort.
I have hornwort, duckweed, guppy grass. I mean, I have all that stuff in there. Actually, I do control the upside of having these goldfish down here, and you know, it just kind of happened to work out that way. They're the guys that keep my my duckweed in control. They keep it in check.
I need somebody to keep mine in check.
African cichlids are pretty good for that too, but I just so happen to have these goldfish, and predominantly that's all they eat is duckweed. It's gotten to the point now where I have to back off feeding them because I'm starting to get short on duckweed. I got to give it a few weeks for it to start growing out again.
Catch back
but
up.
They do, yeah, they do a really good job of eating duckweed, and they're the healthiest fish that I've ever seen. I mean, they're big. Their tank is it's also very clean. So I hardly ever feed them any processed fish food. It's almost 90% duckweed what they eat.
You're gonna make me set up a tank just for one goldfish.
It works.
Just for this duckweed.
And they eat a lot too. I mean, it doesn't take them long. I'll that whole top of that tank, I'll probably be about half inch thick of just duckweed in there, and it might last 3 days at the most. So they go through it. They're eating all day long. And I haven't had an issue with blout or any of that stuff. You know, because it's just natural food. You know, there's nothing in there to mess up their digestive system. And I know it's going through them because you see the little green pellets floating in the bottom of the tank. Little neon green pellets.
Neon green.
Hey, Jeffrey Watts, how's it going?
Jay Wiggity. Most definitely, man. Hey, what would you say your favorite fish would be inside and outside of your fish room?
Oh, my Aphinius mentos. My Aphinius mentos killifish, those are my favorite.
Good deal. Yeah, when he told me about them, because I mean, I'm into killies. I'm into killies a little taste. You know, and when he was saying he had been looking for them, you have them. I had never heard of them. So I'm like, okay. Yeah, that's irony all to itself, for real. But hey, that's how God does it. You know, I'm not tripping.
Oh, yeah.
Most definitely. So what is your short-term and long-term goal in regards to your spot in the hobby?
Okay. Short-term, it's just enjoying it. I'm having so much fun doing stuff like what I'm doing right now. Is one of the things that I enjoy the most. I like talking to people. I like getting to know people. I like talking about fish. So that's kind of my short-term goal. My long-term goal is that I know that once I retire from working, I need to find something to do, something that'll keep me busy. I know too many guys that have worked with me that unfortunately they don't have really an exit plan. They retire, they go home, sit on the couch, and 2 or 3 years down the road, they're not with us anymore. And I know if I don't want that to be the case, I need to have something that's going to keep me busy, that's going to keep me on a schedule, that's going to keep me something that is a regimen that I do on a daily basis. And and that's what this is going to be. I want to eventually, I breed some stuff now. But most of it is for the learning experience right now, trying to learn how to breed, what can breed, how to breed it. Because once I retire, that's going to be my pastime. I'll sell stuff online, something that's just going to keep me busy, give me a routine every day, something to do. It's not what's going to consume my entire time, but I know that's going to be something that I can look forward to every day. Something that's going to, you know, be part of my regiment for that day. So that's the long-term goal. So I'm looking maybe 15 years down the road when I get close to retirement age, that's what I want to do. And in the meantime, I'll continue to do this. Who knows where I'll be, you know, 2 or 3 years down the road. So, you know, things are always changing.
Most definitely. That's cool. That's cool. Let me see if I can remember his name. Shelley. Mark Shelley. Bob. Is it Mark Shelley? Is that his first name? Mark. I think it's Mark Shelley. Mark Shelley. Well, I've been watching Mark Shelley for a few years on YouTube, and I just saw a video, was it today, where he quit his job to go full time in shrimp selling. And, you know, I watched him set up tanks. He had guppies first. Then I saw the transition, gradual transition to shrimp. Instead of putting out videos, you know, showing water changes. He had this big, giant guppy pond. Actually, the guppy pond that I have right here, you know, watching him was how I got the idea. I'm like, man, but his is 100 gallons. Mine's half of that. I'm like, man. And it's in his living room.
Oh, okay.
You know, he got his big recliner.
Must be single.
Honey, got no wife, kids. Whole nine, man. 20-gallon longs. in every, like in this closet, 20 gallon longs. Against that wall over there, 20 gallon longs. In that closet, 20 gallon longs. Oh man, he was doing it. He was doing it. And man, he just announced he quit his regular job to sell shrimp. I was tripping. That is Mark Shelley Aquatics. I was tripping. Because I mean, I literally have been watching him, you know.
Yep.
He, you know, got a website, shot it out there. Panda Guppies. I found out about Panda Guppies first, watching his videos. Man, I'm proud of him, man. I'm about to hit him up on Messenger, actually, now that I just thought about that, you know, and let him know I'm proud of him. Because, hey, man, you talking about dream come true in the case of, it may not even been one of those in front of your mind type of dreams, you know? It's just like, mm-hmm. I love doing this, and hey, this seems to be working. Let me try that right there, you know? And he would always, you know, speak of, man, you know, my job has got me out of town for X amount of days. You know, then he make it back, make a video, water change, and catching up. You know, now he gets to, you know, to kick it at the house, sell shrimp online. That's what I'm talking about. Maybe my new strain of guppies that I'm working on down here. I don't know.
Yeah, you never know.
You know what I'm saying?
You never know.
You know. I'm going to try to hold firm to it.
Yeah, well, that for me, I'm not looking, like I said, this is more of a hobby for me. I've been blessed. I've been blessed because I have a very good job. A job that I never thought I would have. But so, you know, I can retire within maybe the next 10, 15 years. Once I do that, sure, why not? I could try to venture to see if I can make a business out of it. But in the time being, there's no need. This is a hobby, and I want to treat it like a hobby. I love exchanging fish with other people. So, you know, it's just right now, it's a pastime. It's something that I'm passionate about, but it's a pastime.
Oh, my job will run you to selling fish, selling anything, detailing cars. Hey, sometimes you gotta laugh to keep from crying. But hey, there's a means to it. I'm not gonna dwell on it. I made a whole live stream about it, so I'm not gonna dwell on it tonight. Oh man, but yeah, no, it's real. It's real cool, man. You're blessed, sir. Trust me, you're blessed.
Oh, yeah.
You're blessed.
Well, yeah. It's funny because I remember growing up, my one thing that I wanted to be was being a law enforcement. I wanted to be a cop. That was the one thing that I wanted to do. And it so happened that I managed to get to that point. I worked for the Bureau of Land Management, and I was law enforcement ranger for them. But what you dream as a kid and the reality of what the job really is sometimes don't jive.
Don't match up. Yeah.
Don't match up. And but I was very.
You look good
I've
in
always
the uniform,
been,
though.
Oh yeah, yeah. That's why I wore the camouflage. That's why I wore the law enforcement one. And but you know, but I don't know. I've been very fortunate. Somebody's looking out for me. I know that because even when I've been what I think it's at my worst, I always come out of it, and I always come out of it ahead. So yeah. That's why I said I'm very, very blessed and everything. I'm blessed with a wonderful wife. I'm blessed with wonderful kids. I'm blessed with wonderful friends. I know I am. I'm very blessed. So I don't take that for granted at all.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir, most definitely. And I don't sneeze at my blessings either, because when I got that job, blessings. Having a job, blessings. But
oh,
I
yeah.
feel my season is up. So I can go find that next blessing.
Oh yeah.
Oh. What you got, Fish Trapper?
Hey, dude, it's nice up here in California.
What's the
they're talking about food.
Oh, okay. Oh, yeah, they're talking about barbecue. Man.
Did I miss something over there or something? What happened, man?
No, no, they're going back and forth, I guess, about barbecue and sauces and what to put in the sauce.
And Steve rubbing in people's face.
Oh, yeah.
Oh. But yeah, man, we're at the hour and 20-minute mark. And it's time for us to get out the door. It was wonderful. It was wonderful. It was cracked up. But I told you we was going to go in here and tear it up, man. I told you.
Oh, yeah.
I told you. All you have to do, man, is keep it simple. Just we keep it simple. Fish. Fish keeping. It's simple. We keep fish. We keep fish.
It's only as hard as we make it be.
Yep. We keep fish. And everybody keeps fish in their own way. All we have to remember is you have some basics. Basics to keep the fish alive and thriving. The rest of it is conjecture, opinion, short lifestyle choice, all other, you know, terms and descriptions you can use. But we just have some basics that we all have to do to keep these fish alive and thriving. And you win it. You win it in the fish hobby. Fish fam, I love y'all. I love y'all. I'm glad that y'all exist and that I found you. Mexicali, thank you for coming on.
My pleasure.
Thank you very much. And to everybody in the chat that sat here and rode with us, I thank y'all. And for those that watch this on the live stream, not live stream, but the replay of the live stream, thank you very much for checking us out. Thank you, thank you, thank you, thank you very much. Tell somebody you love them because they need to hear. There's always somebody that needs to know that they're not by themselves. And take care of these animals. And we out. Peace.